Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, your weekly roundup for news, perspective, and investment ideas across the cryptocurrency, stocks, options, and Forex markets. So let's talk markets with Mark and Andy.
We're listening to Talking Market Show with Mark Andrew and, of course, the wonderful Henry Raines from the Henry Raines Show. And you still doing that other show there, Henry?
Whenever they broadcast from Florida. Well, I was gone. I started taking human growth hormone, and it looks like I'm getting bigger than both of you.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Let me see. Yeah. What? Let me scoot over here a little bit.
Do the rest of it.
Oh, wrong way.
There we go.
Now I'm almost centered.
All right.
So out here in Phoenix, Arizona, taking a little break, visiting Pops here.
Oh, nice.
So having a good time. Yeah. But what's not having a good time is the market.
You gonna guest on?
What's
come
that?
On?
No, he's off. He's actually. He's yeah, no, he actually went to the VA to get a shot. So I don't know. But anyways, a lot going on around us, but not much is going on in the market. It's pretty a mundane market since mid-April. And Henry, I we talked about this today. There's not much to talk about, is there?
Well, we actually didn't even talk about not talking about it. We texted, and I said, I wouldn't advise doing anything. And you said, I agree. And that was the end of our discussion.
Hold on, you guys. Hold on. I thought we were supposed to have a guest today. What happened with our guest?
Oh, he's actually in the Bitcoin. He's traveling, and he's on his way to the Bitcoin conference, so he's going to reschedule with us.
Oh, okay. We're just not cool enough. I mean, why don't you just admit it? We're just not cool enough.
We're not smart enough for these guys.
If it was Kramer calling him, I'm sure he wouldn't have rescheduled on Kramer.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I think a Bitcoin conference he would have rescheduled.
No, I'm just joking. No, I'm sure people are busy. I understand. It's okay.
Anyway, Bitcoin hasn't really done anything. Yeah, right. Well, Bitcoin really hasn't done anything. Stock market really hasn't done anything since last week, and it's been really kind of a mundane market. I mean, just not much to do here.
Well, hold on. Let's talk about the context a bit, right? So we went into a holiday. So usually the week before this holiday, volume usually dries up. Right? That's nothing unusual there. And then today is the day after the holiday. Volume is usually still pretty dry. Now, what do we have on Friday?
NFP.
NFP. Right?
Friday, non-farm payrolls.
Non-farm payrolls, first Friday of every month. So usually, you know, I'm not expecting much volume or much activity going into that report because often the larger players don't want to do anything significant until after it comes out. Right. Or at least they have their whatever the information that they need. So that's what you have to look at. I mean, there are the times when you get these lulls and it's best not to force trades. But there's some interesting things going on that we can talk about, especially in terms of levels.
Well, I just want to say that I agree that nothing will happen before non-farm payrolls. And I also agree nothing will happen then unless it's something horrible. The next moving market data point is the 10th with the CPI.
Okay.
Is my opinion.
Well,
and you can see my opinion has caused my head to like really get big.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point because, you know, nobody really. Yeah. Nobody pays too much attention to you made a good point, Henry. Not many people pay attention, and normally the consumer price index is a non-event. But you know, with talk of inflation and everything else, I think it is an event. You know, it is becoming more of a market mover, and I think you may be right.
Now, hold on a second.
Especially,
let's just touch on that NFP on the NFP thing for a second.
Okay,
right. So you know, we know that NFP is usually the biggest scheduled economic event that we have each month. Now, the previous NFP. Do you remember at all how that played out, the previous NFP that we had? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It missed, right? It missed dramatically.
It didn't miss. It was pretty bad. Right? But it was pretty bad.
What did the S&P do? The S&P went straight up. Do you remember that? It made no sense.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, it did go straight up. I mean,
but the S&P, when that
kind of gave us a little bit of a,
when that information came out, the S&P actually went higher, didn't go lower. It didn't act in a logical way as you would think, right? And it confused a lot of people. My thought on that whole thing was, you know, if NFP had come out good, the market doesn't want to see a good NFP. Why? Because that means potential interest rate hikes. But because it came out bad, there is no way the Fed can use that as an excuse to raise interest rates. That was my theory. Could be wrong. I don't know. But the thing is, my point is this, for people that are watching that kind of stuff, for one, you cannot react to NFP. You have to let it come out and you have to let the market process it, and the market needs to figure it out, not you. That's the first thing, right? The second thing is, you can't use logic, because as we saw with that previous NFP, if you had used logic, you'd be shorting everything and the market went up. So you cannot get mixed up like that. Let the market tell you what it wants to do. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, in fairness, the market went up the day of NFP.
That's what I mean. Out, I on the day.
On the day it came out, and the market went up. Then it sold off for 3 days after.
Right.
I think when reality hit there. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, the initial reaction. Yeah. And we talk about this all the time. Usually the initial reaction's wrong. And here we are, and we're going into this NFP and also the CPI, which I agree with Henry. It's kind of a, you know,
well, anything
kind of a wait and see. And we haven't made inflation. We really haven't made any progress. We haven't made no progress.
Right.
This market has made no progress since that sell-off.
Let's look at these levels, right? So that NFP, when was that? That was what, the first week of May, right?
The 7th.
May 7th. Here's the 9th. Here's the 7th. If you look in the chart here on the screen, everyone could see on YouTube, this is the 7th. The green candle is the 7th, okay? May 6th. Then the Monday is May 9th, right? And that's where, you know, you get that selling off earlier in that week. So just something to keep in mind.
Actually, it was a 3-day weekend there, too.
Right. What was that?
That was a 3-day weekend.
Oh, okay. So NFP, that was NFP. That was the NFP candle. The market made new highs that day. So here we are, you know, going into the next NFP. Look at this candle today, right? The market closed and we have what? What is that?
That is a bearish pin bar.
It's a bearish pin bar. And that bearish pin bar. Do I get
a gold star or something for that?
What's that?
Do I get a gold star for calling that out?
No. You know. Maybe I should come out with those. But the point is, you got the bearish pin bar and you got it in this resistance area. That's what people need to realize. You know, at one point today, the market was on its high and you have that potential double top. Then we closed like this. Now, there's no sell signal in place just yet, just because the pin bar is there. What does it have to do to activate?
It's got to take out the low there.
Tomorrow.
Now, in fairness, we did take a little short position early on with the NASDAQ. And NASDAQ looks a little bit weaker than the S&P. And so yesterday, even though it was a closed day for the market, the futures market was still trading. And so we took that short on the NASDAQ, and it gave us a little bump this morning. It didn't get too close to our stop target. Yes. Our stop target's a little bit much higher. But look at how it closed. And we said that this morning, you know, to our members, hey, you know, let it play out here. You don't know how the end of day is going. Right. I'm actually looking at entering a short position in the queues here.
Okay. Let's take a look at
this. It's making out to be a lower high.
Yep.
And that outside candle there is just telling.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's definitely not a higher high. You know, definitely near a resistance. I mean, look, you had this resistance back here. And the thing with this market, and people are getting sucked into this, right? Same with Bitcoin and all that other nonsense. People are getting sucked into this and they're not recognizing the risk, right? I had a stream yesterday that I put out on TradingView and on YouTube. And I talked a lot about risk, right? And the risk is very high in these levels, especially for bigger picture, right? If you think you're going to buy something, the market's going higher. It's safe. It's not safe. This is a very risky area to be putting on bigger picture longs. Now, you know, this is a great area for day trades. Any area is good for day trades as long as there's movement. But, you know, swing trades are tough also, right? Especially with the correlated stocks. That's what I'm telling people. Stay away from the correlated stocks right now. You know, if you find something that has its own thing going on, which, you know, I mean, we had a couple of those. Look, GameStop, right, reached its second target in all of this mess. CGC reached its first target, right? That's not a correlated stock. Then it turned to garbage afterwards. I guess they had their earnings, I think, came out. Was it yesterday or today or something? I don't know. CGC. And then AG was another one. AG is gold. So that, I mean, that's silver. So that kind of has its own thing going on. It's not going to be as correlated to the stock market. Anyway, that thing reached its first target. So at least there's some activity going on. But if you notice, this isn't Microsoft. This isn't Amazon. This isn't Facebook. This isn't all the, you know, the highly correlated market stocks. All right, it's just an important point to keep in mind. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, Mark, before you leave the topic, can you bring back both the NASDAQ and the S&P and go from February to the current?
Okay, so I'll start. Well, you want me to start with the S&P first?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So
now the S&P has gone up since February, but if you look at like April 12th, and then you look more or less where we are now. Mm-hmm. Now that's March. Look at April 12th.
You got it. Okay, April's right here. Right. I'm going to draw a box with April
yeah.
in it.
So
right
what? Here. Yeah. Please. So what? My point is that if you look at what appeared to be a breakout there on April 12th, all we really did was we went up, but then we came back down and we're right back where we started. So for a period of 6 weeks, we're basically sideways, even though within the 6 weeks, you've got that range in the middle that I think is close to about 6 or 7% of the S&P. I might be wrong if I'm reading the numbers wrong. Maybe it's closer to 5%. If you look at the NASDAQ from February to current, you're going to find us.
Here you go.
So if you look at like from, that where you got that line from February 14th or so, and we keep coming back to that line over the course of three months. So we hit a point on the NASDAQ market. You can't move either the S&P or the NASDAQ without moving the biggest tech stocks. So the tech stocks have been going sideways, but you did get some run from the S&P because it's not as tech heavy. So you were able to make another high with the S&P just from the rotation to some of the unfavored sectors. So like the FANG stocks just stayed pretty much in that same tight range where they were. You didn't have any impulse either way from them. You got the rotation into some of the reopening and some of the other stuff in the S&P. So you got a little bit. But what I'm suggesting to you is that there isn't anything to move the market one way or the other. I was looking at the last 2 years of the charts. And if you go from, you know, because I was looking at 2 years because March of 2020 is more than a year. But if you look at where we were at that low and how much we've come up, 60 or 80%, depending on how much you're measuring by. And then if you extend it even out to the 2 years and you look at how much this year has moved, this is like a generational move, a generational event. Now, nothing has happened and affected the market in recent times, post-World War II, like the pandemic. You go back to 2008 and you look at the housing crisis that had a negative effect, and then you had a huge move. I don't see how you can get another big move without a major change in the sentiment of the market. I think what you're in the process of now is you got to digest the multiples coming back down, the PE multiples coming back into the normal range for stocks. You've got to adapt to the change, the rotation from the pandemic stocks, the recovery stocks. Now, I can't tell you how long this is going to go on, but it's going to go on until it doesn't anymore. Andy is so young, even though he's sitting there with gray hair, beard, and on his head, and I'm here all baby face and brown, you know, still got my brown hair. I've been around a lot longer than him. So I can remember in the high, my high school years, my sister was already on Wall Street in the Carter years. Oh. And then she was there through all the Reagan years and everything else. And if you, we have not had these kind of extended runs. I remember when things just go sideways and you're just wondering. I mean, you could have lived in Japan for the last three decades and you're wondering, when are we going to break out of this sideways movement? We could have something that breaks out. Maybe we'll just go get the PEs adjusted and then we'll be off to the races again. Or, but unless you have some kind of conviction about a particular stock, you're not getting any tailwinds behind you with the help of the market. You know, it has to be that stock that makes your trade.
Yeah, you know, we had that same, we had that kind of minor horizontal market going back in 2015. Where it kind of peaked in 2015 and then him hauled around at the peak and then kind of gave it back and then finally made the move in 2016 and started to take off again. So if you go back to 2015, and that was kind of when Brexit was happening, we had that event going on. And yeah, right there, Mark. And, you know, so you get these kind of him hauls in the market where they just go nowhere for a year or so. And then that may be it. You know, that may be what we're coming into. Yeah, how much more can you price into this market? How much more are earnings going to go up? You got labor going up. You have a shortage of labor right now, where you know businesses can't even find manufacturing. You know, can't find people to work. So, you know, eventually the supply and demand is going to come back into order, where we're going to have more supply than demand. Right now, we have more demand than supply. You try and book a room, and it's just down in the Keys last week. The Hampton Inn in the Keys. I mean, come on. Normally $120, $139 room. $1,000 a night. Are you kidding me? You know, just everything is going up. Try and rent a car. And of course, you know, you're seeing all that. So once supply steps, yeah, I'm renting a car out here. It was over $1,000 to rent it for a week. So, you know, once you start to see the supply kind of creep up, of course, there's a business expense. I'm out here working.
You go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah. So, I mean, once you get, you know, right now there's a lack of supply, demand is going up. That's going to be really good for earnings. Take a look at a Hilton, HLT stock or something like that. HLT, they're doing really well right now. The stock's doing really well. And I think you're going to see some of that creep in, but what happens when this pulls back and the demand's not there? I mean, you look at Hilton. Hilton's trading higher than it was pre-pandemic at the peak, you know, back in 2020. I mean, this is, you know, so these stocks have recovered. The good ones have, not all of them. The good ones have. And, you know, how much more is in this? Now, I think Hilton's a good stock if you want to take a chance into the next quarter earnings, because I think a lot of people are vacationing right now. A lot of people have been so cooped up for so long, they want to get out. And you're seeing that move. But you know, people recognize that months ago and we're in on it. So you're getting in late. You may get a little bounce from earnings. Look at Ford. Take a look at Ford. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, let me just go back for a second. I mean, you can bring a Ford up, but with the FANG stocks, you have PEs that have almost come back to the historical part. With the Hiltons, you're going to have to look at what the forward earnings are projected to be and make that judgment if they're coming back into normal PEs based on that, because you can't do it on the looking backward earnings. And, you know, I don't know what age group the listeners and the viewers are in general, or what range they would be, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be demographically younger than me and probably demographically younger than Andrew. But if you've only been trading for 4 or 5 years, there's a lot of things you need to readjust your thought process to, because this isn't a political statement, but for 4 years, we had volatility injected into the market by tweets. That's never happened before. I mean, you had headline risk, you had news events that would inject volatility, but you don't have that daily, you know, churn that you could make money day trading either way based on a tweet. And now you've got things coming up. You've got some real macro stuff that's coming up. You're going to have the meeting between Biden and Putin, and the Russians have already released a statement saying they're going to have unpleasant, I don't think they use the word events, but like positioning. They are going to do things going into this this summit that we aren't going to be happy about, and the Europeans aren't going to be happy about. Now, I think that's going to be relatively mild. I don't think they're going to invade Ukraine, but they've already announced they're going to have a buildup on the Ukrainian border. So those are, that's the kind of cycle of news that you have to start readjusting yourself to, things that happen over a month or 2 months. And then you work in the things like Mark is talking about with the non-farm payrolls and some of these other data points that we're used to looking at. And, you know, you just need to be aware of that and then figure when the market has adjusted to this new reality.
Sounds like you're saying we're going to have a big sell-off just because there's, you know, we don't have the mad tweeter on there.
No, because what I'm saying is we're not going to have those big swings in the day. We're having longer trends based on news and data as opposed to a random
tweets.
Statement of policy that comes through a tweet. We're having it released other ways. But I think overall, you know, because of the United States, well, one more thing. You know, you've got money that's coming into the market from 401ks that are going to continue to give a slight upward push. You've got mutual funds that have to stay a certain amount invested. So you have that going forward. But you don't have the kind of big trends that, like the tax cuts, you know, to talk about the last 4 years. Whether you thought the tax cuts were good or bad, that was definitely an impulse for higher stock prices. That's it.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's going to take something to shake this up, but I don't see how much more upside we have here. I know people are going another 5-10%. We're hitting end of year targets. What people, a lot of people at the beginning of the year, we hit their end of year targets already. So I just don't see how much upside there is. And again, you're going to have inflation creep in, and I do travel a lot. You know, and I tend to, you know, stay at the Hiltons just because I'm, you know, I like the Hiltons. But I can just tell you right now that the prices have gone up just ridiculous for a hotel room. So if you're not booking early and really in advance, you're paying a very good premium on that. So once those numbers go up, you know, these places aren't as quick to drop back their price increases. Example, Starbucks, and I use this one all the time. Starbucks, you know, gets an increase in coffee and they raise the price of their coffee because of labor or because coffee beans have gone up. You never see them drop their price once all that comes back down. So once you get that higher pricing, I think it's here to stay. And that's what's really going to be a drag on the economy is then less people can go out, less people can do things. And you've already priced in this assumption that you've had to pay people more money to get them into these jobs. And now the demand's not there. And you have oversupply. So I think that's the next big, I think that's the next big shock to the market.
Right,
so I think you need to have some cash on the sidelines because I think we will get some blue moon buying opportunities.
Okay. So yeah, let's get off the macro stuff here a minute and we have a lot of questions coming up. So let's get into Bitcoin and the altcoins. And we have a couple of questions. We have some stock questions. We're going to get back to those. You know, when we get more into some specific stock stuff. All right, so let's talk about the Bitcoin situation. I mean, how do you want to begin talking about that?
I think the air's come out of the balloon. The hot air's come out of the balloon now, and I think you're seeing that. And you know, like yesterday, kind of gave you, oh boy, let's go. This is it. This is the move. And then today, you're like, oh, maybe it wasn't the move. You know, it's giving you those kind of shocks, and eventually, people are going to become numb to it. I think there's still some room to pull back here. I am not convinced we have seen the bottom here. I just don't like how we're not getting a nice recovery bounce here. We're not getting anything. It's just kind of a little bit here, a little bit there, but you know, it sells right back off. So I think Bitcoin's poised for lower prices. How low? I don't know. You're starting to hear people say, I saw someone posted in one of the comments that someone's saying 7,500 Bitcoin. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible, but that's not, you know, we're a long ways from 7,500.
Low probability, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if you're looking at like a major, major sell-off, I think 10,000 is reasonable. 10 or 12,000 is reasonable if you just had some shock to the market, again, like extreme. Henry was mentioning some of these things, an extreme shock to the market. I think that's where you want to be a buyer. And when everyone, when it gets down to 10, 12,000 and everyone's screaming, oh, it's dead again, you know, because we've heard that story before. But I don't think there's much room to upside.
Before Elon Musk became a factor in the market. I mean, if you go follow the chart back, the Elon Musk rally came in. Isn't that right about there in back February? I don't know.
I thought it was late February.
So I don't even you had, know.
Yeah.
I think it was later February.
This area here.
Right. So all the money that rushed in behind him has now looked to me like it's worked its way out. And maybe we're just right back where we were in February with those that amount of institutions, those people that were believers in the asset class are right where they were.
Right. Well, that's an interesting point. But hold on. Here's the way I look at this thing. And by the way, whatever Bitcoin does, most of the alts are going to follow. Would you agree with that? That, you know, this thing is still the leader.
I don't think, you know what? The altcoins lag on the way up. And then, boy, they found. I was very amazed. I missed a lot of that, you know.
What was that?
Yeah, it does.
Performing differently. Not differently, but in a different ratio than the other alts to Bitcoin.
Which one?
Ethereum.
Oh, right. Okay, right.
It's held up better than Bitcoin has. Sure. And even though it looks bad, if you bought it at 4,000.
Right. The thing is, though, right. So some of them are doing slightly their own thing. Okay. But the thing is, Bitcoin still decides, you know, where they go. And when Bitcoin sold off, they all gave it back. It's not like one held up really well and, you know, and then while the rest went to garbage. These things sold off hard, right, with Bitcoin. So Bitcoin still has proven to be the leader. Right. Now, so when I look at this chart,
Hold on, what do you disagree on there, Henry?
I disagree. Back, whatever I said 2 or 3 months ago when I said it looked like to me that we're getting to the critical mass on institutions over Ether, I'm still seeing that same narrative, that same story that they're following. Bitcoin's narrative has been it's the new gold. And now that has weakened because of the amount of retracement, although I would say that if you've been in a year, you should be pretty darn happy. But Ether's narrative has changed that it's the thing that all the decentralized finance. Some of it's just following buzzwords that the general public and some of the institutions who you would think would have better understanding should have. But that's just the way I see it, that I still see people talking about Ether that are supposed to be experts in a different context with a different narrative, and they're moving it away from the asset class argument of Bitcoin, and they're saying Bitcoin, if they're bears, are saying Bitcoin has not succeeded as being a substitute for gold, although they won't diminish it, they won't totally diminish it because you can't argue with the results if you've held it anything more than a year.
Yeah, you know, just to kind of, you know, Ethereum's down 42% off its high. Bitcoin's down 43% off its high. You know, you're cutting paper there. You're splitting hairs. I mean, so it's they're not as
priced,
you know.
Bitcoin. Look at that chart.
Which one?
Ether priced in Bitcoin and not U.S. dollars.
Okay. This is BET Ether. Priced in Bitcoin, Ether against Bitcoin.
Okay. But you got to go back. Go back to where it was. If you go back to where it was in 2018, it still hasn't hit that high. Well, I'm just saying. So from 2017, I'm going to say from May of 2017 to July of 2018, it was actually at this level or higher. So this would be kind of the lower end of that, being at it's about 0.067 Ethereum to a Bitcoin.
I'm talking about why it's diverging as the narrative has changed in the last 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, you have a point. How it worked. Yeah, how you have a point. I mean, there's no doubt Ethereum's had a nice run, but it also had a nice run in 2017, 2018, and then it got totally clobbered. I don't most of the people that, you know, most of the people that are coming in, and I know, you know, and I know.
Do you want to be consistent?
No, you're right. Absolutely. I don't know if the thesis has changed though. You have the big run up. Bitcoin led the whole market up. The altcoin market rallied, and now Bitcoin has sold off. The altcoins are selling off, and I think there's more pain in the highways. I don't think that Ethereum's going to escape.
For most of 2020, didn't I say I wouldn't have anything to do with Ether?
And I was in the same boat. And
three
months ago, I said
it's changing.
Well, yeah, and I said back in January, I'm warming up to Ether. You know, I sold most of my Ethereum, so I'm not, you know. You know, but yeah, I mean, I don't see it, you know, I don't know. Right, it gets down, you know, I'll tell you where I'm interested in Ethereum. Okay. If Ethereum gets down into the 1200 area or lower, I'm interested in Ethereum. And I think it'll get there. I think if you're patient enough, it'll get there. Maybe it don't, and maybe I miss out on the next great thing, but I'd rather miss out than buy here. When there's 50% to the downside risk.
We can sit here and argue about fundamentals and opinions all day long. You know, I don't pay any attention to any of that stuff, and I don't pay any attention to people. So here's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at levels, right? And I'm looking at structure. And Ethereum, what it's doing right now is the same thing that Bitcoin is pretty much doing. It had this initial push, right? This larger section right here, the bearish section, and now it's consolidating, right? This consolidation is most likely, if you count the little mini waves inside there, it's most likely a mini wave four. Okay, I think we're in a broad wave four, and I think this is a smaller one that's developing inside of it, which means if we test those lows and we take them out, we can see, what did you say? You said 1,200, did you say?
I'm interested under 1,200, 1,250 right. Actually.
If we get such a leg, if it breaks out of that, if it breaks that support, it's possible. Especially if Bitcoin leads the way, you know, that can equate to like a Bitcoin at around 20K, you know, something like that, maybe 26K. Because I mean, that's the next support for Bitcoin. We have 26, then we have 20. If those are cleared, we're looking at 15, right? Those are the supports. I'm not saying we're going to get there because there's no way to predict such a thing. You know, I know a lot of people like to fool themselves and they like to predict things, but there's no way to know. The market needs to show its hand, right? So that's what I'm going at this moment. This consolidation is a momentum continuation pattern, and the momentum is bearish right now. It hasn't reversed yet, right? And that's one of the reasons why we stayed away. Now, we're talking bigger picture, but we stayed away from that swing trade idea that was trying to develop, you know, over the recent few days. We didn't send anything out, and, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but we talked about how super aggressive it was because you're fighting the momentum, right? And you can't do that because, I mean, you can, but you have to be really quick if you're wrong. Because if you get into hope mode, and that's the problem. A lot of people aren't fast enough or decisive enough to get out if the market proves to go the wrong way on you, right? So you, if the thing turns red, you got to take the loss. But they go into hope mode. Let me check my favorite guru and see what he says. And what does the favorite guru say? You should see the crazy videos that I've been watching. Just buy and hold. Just dollar cost average. Nothing about risk, nothing about levels. Just keep buying more. Just keep buying more. That was the conclusion of a few of them that I saw. Thanks, dude. And this guy was getting donations on top of it. People were donating money to him. So anyway, people are desperate, right? So people want to hear that. They want to hear, don't worry, just buy more. What if this thing goes to 20K and you got too big, right? And that's what's going to happen to a lot of people. So my point is, you know, you guys are talking about like fundamental stuff, you know, much bigger picture, macro kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in, you know, what's likely over the next few weeks and what levels can we see, what extreme levels are possible, right? And then if the market delivers those levels, then you need to be prepared and with your plan. If the market doesn't deliver those levels, you have to adjust.
So let me clarify. I agree with Henry. I think there is a change with Ethereum. I think it's becoming more of the next, you know, the next great thing. How long that lasts, I don't know, but I am warmed up to Ethereum. I do like Ethereum, but where am I a buyer? Am I a buyer here? Not with the market looking like this. I'm not seeing that bounce. Now, Ethereum has had a little bit better of a bounce, but again, I think if Bitcoin takes out that low, I don't think Ethereum is going to escape.
It's not the leader.
And not just that, I think if this market starts pulling back,
in general, we're going to see some problems.
You're going to see and I'm as much of a gold bug as I am, you're going to see gold pull back. You're going to see cryptos pull back. You're going to see stocks pull back. This market really gets a good hammering. And where am I a buyer? Take a look at Ethereum. Let's go back to that Ethereum chart.
Okay.
You know, I'm saying, you know, I'm giving extreme lows. I'm giving extreme lows, but you have support there at 2150. It takes out 2150. Really, 1440 is the next support level from there.
Right.
And that's a long ways away. And there's a lot of room for this to run. Remember, beginning of the year, this thing was $100. So there are a lot of people that are loaded up above $800. So would I be surprised to see $800 or $1,200 on Ethereum? No, I'm going to be surprised. Would I be a buyer there? Yeah. Yeah. Because I've warmed up, just like what Henry says. You see in this rotation from some institutionals into Ethereum. Even Cramer, you know, had bought Ethereum and sold some off, but he said he's holding his Ethereum. And, you know, I tend to believe what he says. He has no reason not to lie about it. But, you know, I still think if this market sells off, regardless, I don't think Ethereum's going to buck the trend anytime soon. What I'm hearing from
expected earnings on everything, and it's like just about where it closed.
Zoom did? Yeah, so yeah, you're just you're getting that. Like 190% revenue, profits up 300%. It's not good enough.
So,
it's up 1.5%.
Okay, so now
hold on. So you're just not getting that bump.
Right, since we're on this Bitcoin talk here, let's just answer a couple of questions because we got some Bitcoin questions in the chat. I want to see if we can get to these. So Ramana is one of our members, says, hey, views on Cardano, it seems to be holding up relative to BTC. You guys have any anything on Cardano? Here, let me pull a chart up. Anything to say about Cardano, ADA? While we're talking.
Yeah, I guess, you know, this is one of those that's going to is going after smart contracts, that type of thing, like Ethereum. You got a lot of them, EOS, ADA. There's no shortage of Ethereum type coins out there or projects. So, you know, Ethereum, ADA, if you've made your money and you haven't taken some off, especially if you're in, because this thing was down at like 8 cents not too long ago. If you haven't taken some money off the table, you know, and you're in from lower prices, I would be taking something off the table. I'm definitely not adding here. And the reason is I just think you get the markets, to me, I'm going to break it down real simplistic. Risk on, risk off. And I think we're going into a risk off phase. And I think what Henry brought up earlier about CPI, what you brought up earlier about NFP, all that can make a big change in this market. And we could start seeing some selling pressure. And we could go into an 18-month, and a lot of people don't, you know, if you're new to trading, you've never seen an 18-month, two-year, horizontal, going nowhere market, and it's like just like treading water. Right. It's hard to trade.
Which that fits into my wave four, you know, possibility, the broad wave four, like we saw in gold since August, right? Now, gold may be breaking out of that, but gold sucked for like, 8 months? And never really, it kind of falsely, like, hopeful. And then it would, you know, go back to its support and then break it and all that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, the bigger picture on gold was never bearish, right?
So no, and
it never was.
You brought up all the you bring up all the other things about it. Oh, Bitcoin's going to replace gold. It's digital gold. Gold is dead. You start to hear and all that stuff, and gold sold off into the 1650s. Yeah, you know, 1650s, and now where is it at? 1900. Right. So I think this move, you know, it's probably the beginning of the next wave. I think you're going to get a little down here. And I think if you get a pullback into the 1850s, 1800 area, I think that's a good area to buy some mining stocks or add to your physicals.
Let's just get a few of these questions because we're still on, like, on this ADA thing, right? So, well, here's the thing that I just want to say about the altcoins and, you know, ADA and all them. First of all, you know, Bitcoin needs to lead the way. If Bitcoin doesn't agree, then your altcoin's going nowhere, okay? I don't care if it looks slightly different. ADA is trying to hold up slightly, but it's at a resistance, right? If you look at this chart here, again, I talk from more of a short-term, like a swing trade perspective, and you still have that, like, that little mini range resistance. But again, you know, it looked a little enthusiastic, just like Ethereum and all that other nonsense. If Bitcoin doesn't agree, it's not going anywhere, even if it looks slightly better, okay? Same with Litecoin. Someone asked about Litecoin here. I mean, look at Litecoin, right? Same deal. It was getting all excited yesterday, right? Litecoin had the buy signal. And I talked about this during my stream. I said, There are buy signals in many of these altcoins. The risk can be defined by that high or low, but the chance of that high or low getting taken out are high, meaning you can get stopped out very easily if you take it, because this is a little consolidation and that support doesn't really mean anything. There's no bullish trend right now, right? Higher lows are, they're much more meaningful during a clear bullish trend. This is not a bullish trend. This is not, I'm not going to get into to how we define trends, but the point is there's bearish momentum here. Okay, I'm not going to call this a broad bullish.
That was an ugly sell-off. You took out one, two, three higher highs. I mean, right. Three lows. Significant lows too.
Right.
But you're consolidating alone.
My point is, we saw this buy signal that you see here on Litecoin. We saw this across the board. I must have gone over a dozen charts yesterday that people were asking about that looked exactly like this. Okay, except it looked like this. It didn't have the red candle. It looked like that. So people are like, should I buy it? And my point was, look, if you want to take that chance, okay, but it's low probability because you don't have the structure in your favor. We do have this argument for a higher low, but the broader trend is in that changing situation. If we are in a wave four, we're going to see a lot of false starts like this, and they're going to go nowhere. So you have to have a lot of patience in all of these coins, and you should be really looking for those lows, waiting for the range low to develop. Because if they break, if these ranges break, right, and Bitcoin will have to lead the way, you're going to see some ugly prices. And there are a lot of people that are invested in these things from the February highs, okay? And they haven't banged it out yet. They're just sitting there hoping, and they're consuming all this hope that people are just basically pumping into them. And if there's a break, you're going to see these things at ugly prices. You want to be prepared for the ugly prices. That's all I'm saying. We don't know if we'll get to those ugly prices, but at this situation, at this moment, all these things are not really showing anything good right now, okay? So to answer the question here about Litecoin and about ADA. Well,
let me go back to ADA. Henry, I think Henry and I agree on Ethereum. Just kind of clarify, Henry, are you a buyer of Ethereum here, or would you wait for lower prices?
Well, I've got as much crypto as I want to hold at this point in time. Relative to the other accounts that I have, I could change my mind if it looked really great, but I'm waiting for it to do something. And I know where I would pull out and just preserve my capital if it goes down to a certain amount. I don't know if that's right for other people, but I know where I would do it.
So you're holding ADA, right now. Go ahead. I want to hear your thoughts on ADA.
I don't have the knowledge of it like I should, but I've been watching it because I've been trying to see what the DeFi alternative to Ether is in the things that I'm familiar with from, came out not in the last year, but before that. And of those, ADA has performed the best just looking at the charts and looking at it relative to Bitcoin. I've played around with some of the other decentralized stuff, the DeFi. I've held Uniswap and made money and lost money. I've held Link, made money and lost money. I know Anna is asking about ICP somewhere in those comments. That I managed to lose money and lose money. But it was all just like very small investments, because once you put a little bit of money into it, I'm talking like 1% of everything else compared to everything else, then you start concentrating more. And I was intrigued by ICP because I saw who the investors were. I read some of the, I can't say I understood the white paper, but I read some of the background material and I was intrigued by it. But like I said, with Link and Uniswap, I could sometimes make money, sometimes lose money. All I did was just keep trying to grab a falling knife there with ICP.
Yeah, to me, I kind of look at most of these, and I can relate to Bitcoin. Being someone that likes gold, I'm a big gold bug, so I can relate to Bitcoin. I can see the value there. You hold it like gold; it acts like gold. It's a store of wealth, whatever you want to call it. Used in transactions too. I mean, hey, if someone wants to transact with me with gold, I'm fine with that. I'll take gold as a payment. Just like some people will take Bitcoin as a payment, I take Bitcoin as a payment. Those types of things. So I kind of look at it like this. I'm looking at ADA and some of these other ones, and yeah, the great projects, great technologies and everything, but what gives it its value? What am I getting for my value? I'm able to use the platform. I can, you know, transfer my ADA at, you know, light speed. What good is that to me?
If you were a developer, you're going to choose the platform that is most efficient for the goals that you're trying to make. And I don't think Ether is the most efficient one. I'm not a developer, but, you know, reading what some developers say, but it's the one that's caught the institution's attention. It's one that's caught the talking head's attention. So that's why I've been trying to find the other stuff. With ICP, I mean, we've heard this before. It is the new decentralized internet. We heard that, I forget.
Alaskos.
The names are escaping me, but you know, a couple Alaskos years ago, when you know, we're the new decentralized internet. We're going to run on mesh Wi-Fi or whatever like that, and we'll be free of the tech oppressors like Google and Amazon.
Yeah.
When I saw who was investing in ICP, it got cut my attention, and I cannot see why people would be interested. Of course, I imagine all those people that invested in it got it in for next to nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you're earlier. You're not. Mark Cuban was into Unicorn. That was one of his. It was one of his things, one of his projects. Unicorn. It was big hype. Mark's in it. Must be good. Where's Unicorn now?
I don't even think
it's a coin. I don't even think it's listed anymore. Look at all those SPACs. You know how many SPACs have just gone down the toilet, and a lot of big name investors into them. So I agree with you. I like Ethereum. ADAs and those, I mean, you can trade them. Especially if you can get into a position where you're in it for free, like Fonz did with Dogecoin, Doggycoin, whatever you want to call it. They call it Doggycoin because they got a damn doggy on there. I mean, really. So, you know, Fonz took a trade. He bought whatever it was. He doubled his money, took half off the day. He's got the rest of it for free. If you can do that, I'm all for it. But,
right.
Look, am I putting my 401 in ADA? No way.
Right. You have
Bitcoin? Yeah, I put my 401 in ADA.
You have to regard most of them like penny stocks, right? Some penny stocks you can make some money with, right? But they're like lottery tickets. You have to regard them the same way. I don't care how great the technology is, right? I don't care how much hype there is and how amazing this project is and all that other nonsense from people. They have to prove themselves. So until then, they're lottery tickets. I got people telling me that they're 100% invested. Their whole, you know, portfolio are these things. Man, these are not investable. These are not investment grade assets. You know, they're not. They're highly speculative. No. All of them, even Bitcoin. But Bitcoin happens to be the better of them because it's the leader. Who's this little one here?
This is Fritz, little troublemaker.
It's Fritz.
Oh, is that the, what do you call it? His version of Georgie.
My dad has three little crap dogs like that that just yap nonstop, and then he's got a huge Doberman Pinscher, which is just the nicest dog in the world. Takes it everywhere with him. So, but anyways, yeah, you know, I think there's some projects out there. If I'm looking at Atom, ATOM, is one that a lot of developers, I think Atom and Polkadot had the largest influx of developers going into them. And so, you know, the developers obviously must like these projects.
Right. Obviously, they're not traders. They're definitely developers and not traders or investors.
Yeah.
Like this.
And then, as far as working on the platform and products for it. So, you know, which ones of the thousands out there are going to pan out? Probably ones we don't even know about right now. And maybe a couple of these, but I think there's just so many of them, you know.
Right.
I don't know. My position on it is ADA.
It's not going to be obvious. Whatever comes out, whatever, like, you know, floats to the top in 10 years or whatever, it's not going to be obvious. Just like Amazon 20 years ago, no one was saying Amazon was going to be at $3,000 in 20 years, 20 years ago.
No one was saying that.
Maybe you said that. Right.
I wish.
Amazon was at $5. Yeah. Okay. 20 years
ago. $5 after the
after the pull, yeah. after everything pulled back, after the dot-com, Amazon was $5. Okay. No one thought it was going to be a spectacular Amazon that it is today. No one. So the same goes for these altcoins. Okay. No one knows.
Again, I just don't see where the value comes from. I understand the products. And if you have to use the token to use the platform, great. But just like all the gambling tokens, the unicorns and all the other ones that came out, you know, you're getting a lot of these states decentralized gambling where you can go online gamble. What do I need a token for? Gamble in cash.
Right.
I remember you used to be able to play with Bitcoin, poker with Bitcoin.
Right. You know? I think maybe you still can.
But Henry, I mean, Henry, what are your thoughts on altcoins? I mean, would you be a big investor in them?
I just gave you a bunch of thoughts on altcoins.
Yeah, he just said.
Well, I mean, are you an investor or are you just trading them?
Well, I also said, I tried to pick some of the other DeFi's coins that looked like they were being adopted. I made some money and lost some money, but that's just been in the last few months. So that's not really identifying the long-term trend. And, you know, the same thing with ICP. That had a great story, great investors, and it just goes down.
Right. Never listen to people. Yeah. Okay, so, right, Shriving says, buy 100 coins and hold forever. Right, you buy, whatever, you risk a little money and it's like a lottery ticket. Right, like a lottery ticket. Right, so, all right, now hold on, let's get into stocks here because, you know, we're running out of time. I want to talk about some stocks and we have some stock questions also. So, you know, we talked about the S&P, right? We talked about the vulnerable area. We talked about the NASDAQ. So in this situation, I mean, you mentioned a couple of stocks. Are there any stocks that you, any uncorrelated stocks that you might have some interest in for maybe for swing trades? I mean, how would you, you know, anything you have to say about that?
But Jumia looks pretty good today. It had a nice bump today. Jumia.
Haven't talked about that one in a while. Here, let's take a look.
In a while.
JMIA. So what about Jumia?
You know, it's been a long, painful few months for Jumia holders. And it looks like we're starting to get maybe print a bottom there. The bottom may be printed down there around 15, 17, 18, mm-hmm. wherever it was. I think if you look for a higher low here to go long, I think you can't buy this pop right here.
You're going right into this.
Get a higher low.
Right. So if you buy into that, you're at
27. 27, I think, is a good area to start looking for that for that reversal there. So I'm starting to warm up the Jumia here.
Now, so would you consider this a highly correlated stock or no?
No, not correlated. Other one I'm kind of starting to watch is QuantumScape US.
Which one?
QuantumScape QS.
QS. Oh, we haven't talked about that one in a while. Isn't this an EV stock?
This is one. This is an EV stock one. This is one that Henry got me into or brought to my attention.
I remember we used to talk about this all the time.
Long time ago. Yeah, it seems like a long time.
What do you like about it?
So I'm starting to like that it's starting to try to build a base here. It's not really making any lower lows. It's kind of get a little failed low there. It's at a real point of where the market has just totally shunned this thing off. So you have almost a 6 months.
A brutal short story that's been hyped. And that if it's true, there'd be no reason to put money into it.
What's the story?
Gotcha.
that it's all smoke and mirrors and that there's other technology that's going to come along that the CEO is dishonest with his representation. But, you know, that's what that's the story short sellers tell. But
what was like Nanex or wasn't it? You know, Nanex and what was that? The X-ray people. What was that, Henry? NNOX, I think, is the ticker.
NNOX, I think.
But NOX.
They actually proved people wrong because they came out with their products and they got a big partner and the products work. So, you know, I guess it just goes to show you sometimes liars tell the truth when they got something good to tell you.
Right. So, you know, again, man, that's why I don't pay attention to people. I mean, you bring up the chart QS, right? So what does the chart tell us? Well, you know, like you said, Andrew, failed low. I mean, that means something, okay? And you have this little pop going on, this outside candle. Someone had asked about an outside candle. We should probably answer that question. The thing is, in order to prove itself, though, it does need to take out this previous lower high, which is at $29.68, so you figure around $30, needs to clear the $30. That would be confirmation that this bearish structure is changing. The momentum is changing. Okay. Doesn't guarantee you're in a bullish trend again, but it means that the bearish structure is losing its effect. So that would be a good sign. Similar to like Jumia, right? Jumia is sort of doing something like that. Just needs to pull back. You could look for that breakout on QS, but I definitely like the idea. There's a lot of potential too, chart-wise, a lot of potential. Even if it goes back to the middle of the range, I mean, you're looking at $45. This thing is at $26 right now. So that's, you know, almost doubling, almost. So,
One that we've been kind of watching for a while is Snowflake, S-N-O-W.
Oh, no.
And this one's starting to look good. This one is looking good. I think technically wise, you've getting back up where it's pushing at that resistance around 240. Yeah. Yep. You're getting this inside consolidation off that nice spike there, which I really like. So I think Snowflake's along.
Would you buy it now for a swing trade, or what do you mean by that? Like long?
Well, yeah, I think that this one, it's not a market stock. It's not going to trade. It's not on the S&P, so it's not going to be.
Not going to be highly correlated. You know, okay.
Not going to be highly correlated. And these are so beaten up that if the market is going to rally, it's going to be some of these, the Snowflakes, the Palantirs that have been just, they're out of sight, out of mind, that are going to rally. And I think, both of them are doing the same type of structure. Similar. So I think you're seeing this run back into the big data, you know, big data crunching. Okay. So I like Snowflake. I think Palantir is another one that you could look at.
Yeah, we just took a look at that. Okay, so
Henry, what's your thoughts on these from fundamental views?
Well, Snowflake reported earnings that were favorably received last week, so that would show the movement for the last few days. Palantir, I don't know. I haven't looked at that now. I mean, not recently. I'm not big on any of these things until we get a more general change of sentiment. But as Snowflake, I mean, at least you have a reason. You know, some kind of conviction on why you would want to go into that trade. You know, it's great to have the setups on the charts, but unless there's something about that makes that stock special, then you're going to get whipsawed by whatever happens in the general market. Jumia, I would stay away from. I mean, you may get it. If you're talking a 2 to 3 day trade, maybe you can make money that way. But as far as you're into headwinds against online retailers, you're dealing with a company that's based in Africa that haven't come out of COVID yet, where there's other parts of the world are, you know, so you got headwinds against that, but you know, maybe you get a bounce for a couple of days. Maybe you can make a trade on that. I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
Yeah. I can't believe this thing was at $70. They make no money. And I think the company's actually based in Germany, isn't it?
Yeah, they're in Berlin.
Is it Germany or
they're based in
Berlin? Okay. They're headquartered in, you know, Berlin.
But their markets where they make their revenue is in Africa.
In Africa, right.
In Africa, yeah. So, yeah. But hey, I'm going to be honest with you. I remember back when the internet first came out and, you know, people started buying stuff on the internet. And I was really, I'm not buying on the internet. Why would I do that? Why would I give them my credit card? Who knows who's hacking that? And now it's, you know, everyone's just on there. Oh, yeah, what's my credit card number? Boom, 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 boom. You just pump it in. So. It's amazing how fast time changes or how people's views change on stuff.
Right. So wait, since we're on stocks, because we have to move on here so we can get to our trade of the week in just the next few minutes. But someone has a question.
I'm going to go over gold.
Well, hold on. Tilray real quick. Okay. You have any comment on Tilray? You know, one of our favorite.
I've been watching the cannabis stocks and starting to see a little bit of bump in them. Not necessarily Tilray as much as look at Cronos, CRON. They had a nice bump. I don't know if it was an earnings bump or whatever.
I think
but man, that's a nice
CGC,
bump.
CGC started the little party going. If you look at CGC, CGC went to our first. We sent this out as trade of the week over the previous week. It went to target one, right? Yesterday or Friday, 26.54 was the high. Our target one is at 26.25. And then they gave it right back. It's right but back at 24.29. Good thing we put target orders in, right? Anything you were saying about Tilray?
Yeah, so I'm kind of warming up to the cannabis stocks here, but I'd like to see a little more structure.
Yeah, then
you don't own any and you want to own some. I mean, if you're buying a low here, take a small bite, but yeah, I'm
still
not,
have a little ways
I think
to
it's
go.
Just gonna be an overcrowded market. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm out here in Phoenix, and it's all, you know, it's unlike Florida, where where I'm from, it's recreational, and they got a shop on every corner. I've yet to see Tilray or Cronus or CGC in any of those shops.
Okay.
Not that I'm going in. Not that I'm going in, Henry. What I've heard on the streets.
He looks from the outside, you know, from the window. He looks in from the window.
I don't think they let you look in the windows.
No, no, they don't. But I will say this. I was in one in Oregon. My friend wanted me to take me to one. And so we went to one in Oregon, and you got to give them your license. You go in there, and it's just, you know, it's a nice little display case. It's almost like a bakery, you know. You got your different types of cannabis up there, and you tell them which one you want, and they weigh it out and put it in a package for you, and you go. I've yet to see any CGC or Tilray or any of those at any of the ones I'm doing research on, the ones I'm doing research on. So, I'm sorry?
What was the average age of the customer that were around you in that store?
15.
You know, when I was honestly, I've only been in one, and it was in Oregon a few years ago. So, and it was mostly younger kids, and I say kids, you know, being, you know, over 50. So, you know, 20, 30 year olds.
Dispensary here, but that's not recreational. But
no, that's medical.
It could have been a high school reunion. Oh, so, that was the customer base for them.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so, my friend that took me in there, she was your age. So, you know, yeah, and she goes in there all the time. Right. Now, she did buy me some chocolates, t-shirt. But they were non-THC ones. They just had the cannabinoid in there and that. They work. I'm not going to say they didn't work. They worked.
Great. All right. So,
but yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a crowded market. I think. You know, I had a lot of hope for cannabis because I thought, you know, but the problem here's the problem, is you have these companies, CGC, Cronus, and all these big companies that are waiting to get into the United States, but until the federal government does something, they can't. So you're starting to see a lot of little small growers in the United States, you know, taking market. So if by the time, you know, what we have 20 some states already have it recreational, something like that. I mean, and the big ones, most of the big ones are your California, New York, you know, those states, they're already recreational. Arizona, I'm shocked. I mean, they're on every corner. Not on every corner, but they're all over the place. You know, I think you're going to have a hard time making those markets for them making it. They should have opened the market, so I think it puts them at a very big disadvantage right now for getting into the U.S. market.
All right, so, let's talk about gold. You said you want to talk about gold real quick.
Then
we can get to the trade of the week. All right. So let's pull up the gold chart. And what do you have to say about the gold chart?
Just want to say gold's not dead. Bitcoin did not replace gold. What I wanted to say. And I don't think it is. I think gold has more room to run. I like this. This is a very strong structure coming out of a very deep low.
Which we bought.
And I think actually your trade's up there still. Yeah. So and I'm looking for another, and we bought a bunch of miners too. We kind of accumulated miners over that period. And I'm not saying we accumulated them all at the low. I think we started back in January and February.
We started pushing that like in February going into March, and we got a lot of people into them. And now they were getting a little nervous at one point, you know, when these things were pushing the lows. And what did we do? We didn't say bang it out. We said, just don't keep putting on
more.
What if gold goes to 1600? It could happen. It didn't happen, but it could. And you don't want to be overexposed. And now everyone's pretty happy with their gold positions.
Yeah. And I like gold here. So I think any pullback into the 1850, 1800 area,
that's what I was saying,
a definite
too.
Buy.
Definitely looking for another long in gold if you can get the opportunity. Don't want to buy it here at this price.
No, this could be the start of the fifth leg. And if this is part of the fifth wave, this is the one that could take us to 2300.
Right.
You know, or so, maybe higher. Who knows? I'm not going to be one of those 3,000, 3,500 guys, but, you know, it definitely could go into the
23s. You could see on the chart here, right, the peak, the August peak, right, to the March low. That's basically wave four, which, by the way, I bring this up all the time. This is what Bitcoin can do, and it can persist for months, all right? It can be similar to this. It sucked when gold was doing this, and it was very confusing and very difficult. Anyway, now people see this. Right, and I'm starting to see the ads. Oh, buy gold, but I'm not buying gold now, you moron! I bought gold back at 16, whatever, 17, 20. Why would I buy gold now? We sold our gold at least for the swing trade. So, this is not where you want to buy it. This is near resistance, but this could be the wave one of five, right? And if that's the case, right? You're looking for that wave two pullback, and that would be a great buying opportunity if that can develop, right? And we don't know where those lows can be, but like you said, 1850, 18 quarter, 18 even, those areas are potential areas for a new swing trade idea. And yeah, I'm definitely watching for that. Right, so that's the thing.
Like, yeah, and
when you see the ads come out, when you see the ads, see ads on YouTube, buy gold for your IRA, buy gold, blah, 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 blah. You can't listen to that stuff. All right, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, the premiums is starting to catch back up to the premiums because the premiums have come down. They were like 175, 200. You know, we said, hey, price is going to catch up to the premiums. Now you're at about a 135 premium, which isn't too bad for gold here compared to where it was. Thing normally it's a 3% premium, 4% right. premium. Look,
the thing you have to watch out with on gold, right? Because again, it's going to require some kind of catalyst to get this thing to pull back to begin with. Because we're in stimulation mode right now everywhere, right? That's why we're not seeing any pullbacks. We're in stimulation mode from all that stuff we talked about before. If the Fed comes out with any surprises that the market is not aware of right now or not pricing in, if they do it, because again, you can't predict the Fed. If they do it and they say any hint about, oh, we're going to raise interest rates because blah, blah, blah. If they say something like that, gold is going to, you're going to see the hammering in gold. All right. And that is going to be the beginning of a potential buying opportunity. But you have to be careful with that. You don't want to get in too early. All I'm saying is they can surprise you. Right. It can just come out of nowhere. So just be prepared. That's why it's good to know your levels and be prepared, you know, with your plan. OK, you're going to say
I'm not sold that in rising inflation is going to be rising rates is going to be bearish for gold. I think it's going to actually be bullish for gold, because if you go back to the 70s. Gold made a huge run in the 70s when you could get 16% at the bank on a CD. I mean, that was crazy money. You remember those times, Henry?
Henry was like 30 years old back then. I
didn't pay attention to gold back then.
Well, I mean, you remember going into the bank and seeing 12, 15% on CDs, you know.
Were you going in with your mom?
You don't remember that?
With my grandmother.
In the 70s. It was early enough in the 70s when I was still going down to
back then.
Yeah, I was back in the 70s when we used to go to the store and I'd get $10 roll of quarters and take them home and open them up and see if there were any silver ones in there. You could still find silver quarters in the silver. So that'd be early 70s.
Well, like, right. You could try to compare that time. But the thing is this, if the dollar goes higher, gold is probably going to be forced lower. I'm not saying gold is going to go back into some kind of that wave four lows. I'm not expecting that, but it may be enough of a catalyst to give us that correction that we're looking for another swing trade, at least. I mean, something like that, but the rising rates means stronger dollar and nothing is going to like a stronger dollar. Okay. Gold, stocks, everything, nothing likes a stronger dollar in this situation. Remember, we have a different situation than we had back then. We have a lot of people that can't make their house payments. We have a lot of people that can't pay their rent. We have a lot of people that are heavily in debt, and higher interest rates not going to be good for anyone. Okay. So,
well, you know, it's a good point you brought up because, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago about the evictions that were going to come along.
Evictions.
They were preparing for, you know, the largest evictions ever in the history, you know, in a short period of time. And it came out on CNBC today that they're preparing for 11 million evictions over the next month. 11 million. That's a lot of evictions. And so, you know,
a lot of tents.
So you got a lot of things that could, you know, result in a, you know, give you a little bit of a crushing to the market.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So that's that. Let's get into trade of the week. And hold on. Let me get my music on here because you know how I never cue that up right. And let's start with Henry. Henry.
Oh, it's easy for me because I can't think of anything I would tell people to put their money into.
No trade of the week from Henry. Okay. All right. I'm not too surprised. Yep. All right, Andrew, how about you? What do you got?
I'd be looking for shorts in the NASDAQ or the S&P.
Shorts in the NASDAQ.
I don't like any longs here.
Hold on a second. Let's take a look at the chart. So short, let's take a look at the S. I was looking at that S&P, by the way. I was thinking the same thing, you know, because of that pin bar. So you're saying short the S&P. How would you do it? Would you just short the SPY or what would you do?
Yeah, if it's me, I'm shorting the SPY, you know, or selling a CFD.
Okay. So like SPX USD, like I have up here. But if you don't have access to the CFD, not everyone does, SPY or QQQ, right? Which one do you like better, QQQ or SPY?
QQQ,
because it's relatively weaker. So that's your potential trade idea. All right, here's what I was thinking. I was looking around at some stocks. And again, I'm not a big proponent of stocks, long stocks in this situation. But here are two that I thought looked interesting, right? Similar to GME, you know, like we looked at recently. SENS, which is like a $2 stock. Look at this consolidation. I was only interested in the consolidation breakout. This is not a highly correlated stock. Thing is, it's very cheap. So if you get the breakout, maybe, you know, you're looking at maybe $1, $1.50, maybe $2 of potential reward for maybe about 75 to 80 cents of risk, something like that. Okay. SENS. That was one idea that I was considering. And then the other one was CarGurus. You know, we have fake gurus and we have CarGurus. So here's CarGurus, C-A-R-G. It's got a similar situation, right? You got the little consolidation going on after this pop. And, you know, obviously they sell.
I like that one.
You like CarGurus?
I like CarGurus.
It's also a little more expensive. It's not a $2 stock. And if you know, the reward risk, you're looking at maybe risking about $5 to reasonably make about $5 if this thing can get, you know, that next leg into this gap area right here, right? That's what I'd be looking for. Also, this is not highly correlated. You know, it's not a heavy S&P stock. So
when do they report?
That's a good question. I don't know. You want to check that out? Maybe Henry can check that out. CarGurus, C-A-R-G.
Did they?
Maybe they reported. May have reported recently.
August 4th, the 9th.
That's the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So I guess SNES is out. We're not gonna do that one. So
I like CarGurus.
It's between CarGurus and what? At QQQ short, right?
CarGurus. I like it.
Short. Yeah. So you like CarGurus. Okay. Well, what do you like about it? You like the consolidation?
I just like that there's a big shortage of cars. Used cars are going for a huge premium. CarGurus is one of those that's going to benefit from it.
If they can get
the the truck. Well, you know, the truck that I bought last year is worth more now than when I bought it, which you don't ever get.
It's crazy.
Worth 20% more. Went down to the dealer, goes, "Oh, yeah, we'll give you." I'm like, "What?" You know,
sell it.
Like CarGurus. Yeah. Well, got to buy another one. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. All right. So that's then we'll pick CARG. All right, everyone. So here's the deal. CARG will be trade of the week. If you're a free member of Greenbridge, you'll get the email. Make sure you're signed up as a free member so you can receive that. And if you don't get the email, check your spam folder because sometimes it goes into the spam folder. I should have this out before tomorrow's open. Here's the thing I have to say about these trades. Okay. Like, let me just show you real quick. Like GME, right? GME was a recent one. It went to its second target and it's fooling around a bit, but the trade worked out well. CGC, like I said, went to its first target, okay, and now it's kind of pulling back. You have to make sure that you respect the buy stop and the stop loss, because the thing is, these stop losses are put in place so that if the trade turns to garbage, you take your loss and you mitigate the rest of the risk. Otherwise, I mean, these things can pull back dramatically and you can lose a lot of money if you don't respect that stop. And, you know, it just bothers me when people say to me, "Oh, I forgot to put the stop in." And then they lose a ton of money, right? So you must respect those orders. The buy stop also is very important because sometimes that'll keep you out of a bad trade, right? Because it may not touch the buy stop and never get into the trade to begin with. GME, GameStop, took a week for that trade to even become active, right? A week before that buy stop was reached. Otherwise, it was just fooling around. That could really help you mitigate risk as well. All right, so I just wanted to throw those two comments in there.
You guys have something relevant to what Andrew was saying about inventory. The car offers dealer enrollment. Okay, so car offers is a entity. Dealer enrollments, the dealers are enrolling SOAR as its instant use vehicle trading platform, provides much needed inventory supply. Now this is a PR release, but the car offer is the inventory acquisition innovator that CarGurus has. So maybe they have that solved. I don't know. I just saw the article and it's actually the press release, and it just came out on the 21st. So who knows? But
okay, cool.
Maybe Mark is
thanks for sharing.
Doubly awesome.
That's what we're going to send out, C-A-R-G.
So I like it when the technicals back up the fundamentals and the fundamentals back up the technicals. It's a winning trade.
Okay. All right. So cool. So that's what I'm going to send out. That's why we do trade of the week, and we'll see how that goes. So watch for it in your email. All right, you guys. So, hey, thank you guys for, you know, Andrew for joining us from you know, Phoenix there. And Henry, of course, thanks. People were missing you, Henry. I saw a comment in the chat that they missed you. They're glad you're back. So, you know, it's good
to be back.
Okay, cool. And maybe next week we'll have our guest. What do you think?
I think the week after.
Oh, the week after?
He's in for the Bitcoin.
Oh, okay. Okay. Who goes to Bitcoin?
Time to get more bandwidth.
Well, I got I got some more bandwidth, so we should be good now. All right. Anyway, okay, cool. So thanks, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. And join us again next week. All right, guys. Take it easy.
Yeah.